This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. The gays and lesbians have come a long way in the last 30 years, and whilst we still have some way to go regarding equality under the law, generally we are accepted, or at the very least, we are understood. Guys with guys, chicks with chicks, it's hetero, it's homo, and everybody gets it. It's static.
However, for some people, life is not that simple. Growing up is often hell for those who question their gender. Biological identity is only a physical presentation of sex, male or female, but for some, there is a disconnect. They feel opposite to how they present.
For others, their biological presentation is not as clearly defined. Being born with boy bits and girl bits means you fit. Where?
Gender identity, sexual identity, masculinity, femininity are all, by definition, very different, yet very interconnected and complex.
Being different is never easy, but it is a challenge often made harder by us. Yes, some of the greatest discrimination stems from gay men and lesbian women.
And like most discrimination, its source is ignorance.
Joining us word for word is a young man who hopes to educate, inform, and help us to accept a basic human right, the right to be. Welcome, Jez, to Word for Word.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with how you identify and get some of the terminology out of the way.
Yeah.
And then we can lead more into to what it's all about.
Yeah, well, I guess in this context, when I'm talking about this topic, I would identify as a queer trans man.
Okay.
But, you know, moving about the world, I just would go about as a man, really.
The word trans, it kind of implies that you're still transient.
Yeah, it's about sort of maintaining an identity, which I've sort of been struggling with at times. So, you know, obviously I'm sort of post-transition, meaning that I feel as though I've sort of finished everything that I want to and I'm happy where I am, yet I still feel it's important to incorporate that aspect of my identity in certain communities still, so that it's not something that's invisible for me, and it's still something that I deal with constantly, but sort of in a less obvious way, because I've sort of have physically reached a point that I'm presenting and I'm happy, but it's still very much a part of my life. So that's why I personally choose to identify as a trans man in certain, you know, certain circles.
Okay, well, we'll get into that and how disclosure and how you, there is a coming out process that you continually have to do. What about some of the other, now there's tranny boy, there's F to M, M to F, CIS. Can you go through some of the terminology that really, I, some of it I don't get. I actually have to go and look up.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so because I'm identifying as a trans man, that sort of would signal that I don't identify as cisgendered. Because I was not born a man, yet I, you know, underwent a transition to become a man.
Let's go back to cisgendered. What is it, CIS?
Cisgendered is basically a term that means that if you're born with a particular biological sex, that matches how you identify with your gender. So for most people in the world, when we're born, our gender identity would mostly match our biological sex, and for those people it's cisgendered, or they might be known as non-trans people. But for other people that don't feel as though their gender identity matches their biological sex, then there's terms such as transgendered, transsexual,
Now, tranny, B-O-I, tranny boy.
Yeah.
Is that a male?
Tranny, B-O-I. Well, a boy is a... Is B-O-I, the term boy, is a word used in a lot of queer communities, not only in, like, sort of the drag king area, but also gay men use it as a way to sort of describe a dynamic between, like, maybe, like, the daddy and the boy, or, you know, it's maybe a more feminine way of describing a boy in a gay circle, and it's a word that's used in both men, male and female sort of areas and gay and lesbian areas. But, so, I guess tranny boy is just a diverse, it's another diverse term for describing that there might be someone that's a bit genderqueer.
Okay, let's go through one more, which would be a cross-dressing and the difference between trans.
Well, my understanding is that cross-dressing is that people, you know, who enjoy to dress up in an opposite sort of gender identity and enjoy dressing like that, but they might not be transsexual, so they might dress up for, you know, a certain while and enjoy that role play or enjoy dressing that way, like a drag king or a drag queen. Or, you know, they might like to go out in the world, you know, dressed in the, you know, as the opposite sex. But it's my understanding those people may not always identify as that gender in their full-time life. So I think that's the difference between cross-dressing and transsexualism.
Okay, well, I think we've got some of the terminology, and I'm sure some more is going to come up along the way. I know when I do my reading and I try to keep up to date and try to, you know, be clues in and do all those kind of things, and I do get swamped with some of the language, and I think, oh my God, either I'm old or I'm stupid.
I'm like
that probably
too.
Both.
I must have had a break for a couple of years and focused on some other areas of my life, and then when I got back in and got up to date, there was new terminology that I had to get my head around as well.
It moves quick.
Yeah, it moves quick, and it's a good thing. The danger of it is it can maybe alienate some people, and it's hard to have sort of stability and consistency with terms, but I think it's a good way to approach life in general is to just to constantly be educating yourself and refreshing your knowledge of areas so that our brains don't go dead anyway. So
mine does sometimes. Doesn't
mine's
it?
Always, yeah, mine's always dead.
No, it's not, darling. No, it's not. I only pick on you for fun.
My brain is dead this morning.
Now, let's talk about... We love the black couch. We love the sofa. Uh-huh. Let's go back in time.
Okay.
Jez is looking at me going, oh, God.
No, it's all right.
She has a tendency to do this, Jez.
I do. You're not alone. No. Now, let's go back to the black couch.
Yeah.
Growing up, born a girl.
Yeah.
So let's go through some of the early childhood memories from you in relation to gender identity.
Yeah, sure. Well, I often think about that when is my earliest memory. And I think I thought about this the other day. I think my earliest memory where I sort of was imagining myself as an adult, it was always that I would grow up to be a man. Mm-hmm. And I had this idea that I wanted to be a businessman. I would have been about three. And I remember dressing up in my dad's clothes and getting a, and they were way too big for me, and getting a briefcase and filling it full of paper and setting up a desk and just scribbling. I didn't even know how to write. So if I look back and I think, how was I embodying my gender identity back then? It was always as a man. And I would have believed that I was a man until I hit puberty, or at least until society started to place expectations on my behavior. And that happens from a really young age.
It does.
You know, your parents try to sort of enforce those sorts of behaviours as well as the education system and everybody else, and can be quite restrictive. And it's not it's like having to put on a sweater, being told that you should like it, and then after a while you realise, you know, I don't really even like this jumper, but you want to get it off.
Around that time, so you're having the thought of body issues, of wanting to be a man. How does sexuality come into that when you hit puberty then? You know, how does that, if you're defying yourself that you want to be a man, where does sexuality come into that?
Yeah, well, I think sexuality is can really complicate gender identity even further, because you're kind of waiting. Well, there's triggers. Yeah. So you might be thinking that you're attracted to boys or attracted to girls, and then that defines who you are. And so it can be a very difficult time if you think that you might be attracted to girls. What does that mean, and what kind of attraction is that? But I think in my journey, like, I've been attracted to men when I was younger, and then women, and now everybody. So it was almost like two separate journeys going on at the same time, and they did interconnect, and it did place a lot of pressure on trying to reconcile what my gender identity was. But once I was older and I realized that I didn't need to make any decisions about sexuality, it could just be what it was, that was a lot easier.
Yeah.
At that time when you're going through puberty, would you be thinking then as a female and in a female body at that point, not to want to say anything wrong, but that maybe lesbian at that time, would those kind of, because you think, okay, well, I'm that, but society would say if I'm a female attracted to females.
Yeah.
It would have been quite complex. It would have been a real mind game for you at that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at that time, I think kids these days are really lucky because gender is a topic that is talked about and the internet is really accessible. So there's trans guys as young as, you know, really young, starting to realise that they feel differently, and there's a platform and a forum for them to express that. But for me, in growing, it was in the 1990s when I was in high school, and I basically felt as though I needed to come out. I came out as when I was 15 to my mum, and I said, you know, I think I'm gay. And she didn't care. She said she knew since I was 3. So
since the suitcase.
It was a real non-event. But I felt that I needed to identify that way because that was what society, that's the box that society had created for me at that point, you know.
So you accepted your sexuality before you accepted your gender?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the gender thing was a very, very long process, and it wasn't until I knew there were people out there like me and that you could do it that I realised it was something that was possible.
Yeah.
Well, when did you start finding out that information and where did you find out?
I started going up to I grew up in Frankston, and as soon as I got my licence, I would drive up to the city and go to the Drag King Club, King Victoria. So I was about 18, 19. And that's where I started to meet other people, you know, real gender diverse people, a lot of real masculine women or masculine identified people. And then I started to meet, I met a couple of trans guys. And back then, I reckon, you know, there was only about two or three that I knew of, you know, in all of Australia. And it's just, it's really quite amazing how fast it's progressed, where people feel so comfortable now, and it's great to have more numbers, you know.
But did you have that sense of isolation at that time? Did you think, oh, there's only two or three, or did you think, oh, wow, there's two or three other people that I know?
Yeah, well, it kind of blew my head away, and I was always a very silent processor. It was like I would just like take it in. I wouldn't discuss it unless I knew what I was really talking about, and it was a really long time. You know, I would say good 3 or 4 years of just like thinking about this personally before I sort of made the decision and realized this is what I wanted to do.
What were some of those thoughts personally that you went through?
I was worried about how my family would respond. I was worried about what it would mean for my future, what impact it would have on my health. You know, all these insecure thoughts that I think everybody has when you try to take a big leap is like, will everybody like me? Will I be rejected? Yeah, you know, a really, really scary thought was basically, would I just be an outcast from society and labeled a freak and be hated? And it's just unknown territory. So just going into something that was totally uncharted and I had no knowledge of it. It was really scary. So I set out to travel overseas and learn more about it and meet more people. So.
And we're going to talk more about Jez's story. We'll get into some of the kind of the medical interventions and where you went to after that, finding out what was going on and what options were available to you.
Yeah.
It's an interesting story. This is Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network.
Word for Word, delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word, challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining.
Word for Word, with Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson.
Broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
This is Word for Word across Australia on your Community Radio Network. My name is Sue Wilkinson and joining me today is Andrew Pryor. I apologise for my terrible voice today. Joining us in the studio to talk about his journey F to M is Jez. Jez, you're talking about when you hit puberty and you're in 18, 19, you were finding out more and you thought, okay, there are avenues for me. You started meeting people who were openly trans and you said you were thinking about going overseas, or you did go overseas.
Mm, yeah.
Tell us about from that time onwards, what happened?
Yeah, it all sort of came to a big crescendo when I was actually about 22 years old and I was appointed a general manager of a company. So my career was really like taking off.
Now, just clarify, is this as a female?
As a female, yeah. And I had to go overseas to India with the owner of the company, and that experience I found really highlighted how much I didn't feel like a woman, because in Australia I felt like I could be who I was and be kind of androgynous, but it wasn't until I was placed in a totally different context in an international business sort of realm where I had to really take up the role of a woman overseas that I just despised it, and I despised it being put on me. And it was kind of like a really big alarm bell that it was like, okay, this is a real big issue that I need to address.
What were the issues, do you mean, as a woman in the men's corporate world?
No, or just being personally, like it was like the calling was getting too strong, that it was creating problems in my life. You know, I thought, I don't want to continue down this path. I'm feeling a lot of internal resistance to being a woman and being introduced as a woman. And I thought, I've got to do something here and now. Otherwise, I don't want to leave it too late. The earlier I start, I thought, then the longer life I'll have as being happy. And also the biggest problem in transitioning is kind of like your life starts again with a new identity. So you kind of want to make sure that you're sort of leaving behind all those ghosts a little bit. So I did have to change jobs. And that was when I decided to leave that job. I packed up and sold everything and moved out of home and just went with my bag and went overseas just to explore, and had no plan for the future apart from focusing on what was important to me and my identity and what I needed to do.
And what did you need to do?
Well, I wanted to understand more. I wanted to go out and experience a side of myself that was not in view of my community around me, because sometimes it can be very suffocating when you have got peers or people, everybody kind of has an agenda that they're trying to push. So if I thought, if I freed myself of all of that, then I have got total freedom to explore and really discover parts of myself that were important to embody further. And so I went to Amsterdam and Berlin and the UK, and you know, everything just fell into place from hooking up on meeting a whole bunch of drag kings on a plane on the way to Berlin, and then
that's a flight to remember.
Yeah. You know, and this femmes are handing me notes to meet them at certain clubs on the plane as I walk past them, and you know when you're on the right path because everything starts to go right. And yeah, I met so many amazing people when I was traveling, and I got to explore in sex clubs, and I started to ask people to use male pronouns, and I started to sort of explore and experiment with that without having to deal with anyone that knew me, which was far easier to do, I think.
Can I say about the sex club thing?
Yeah.
That is so brave a thing to do. I mean, you know, for just a gay guy born as a man, it's often, for some people, a brave thing to do, to go to, and some never do.
Mm.
Some never go to a sex on premises venue. But the idea that you know that you're overseas, I know sometimes when you go overseas you break boundaries.
Yeah.
But for me as a man, the idea that you're overseas and that you're so brave, you're brave enough to go to a venue like that. Was that a European thing? Like, was it just because you were overseas, or was it because of that culture there in Europe that you felt that you could be so free?
Yeah, well, at the first club I went to was one in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the attraction around Berlin is just, you know, Germans are just known for their kink play. And, I remember watching Liza Minnelli in Cabaret and seeing the underground bars and burlesque. And it just was thriving with exploring that dangerous side of pleasure. And I thought, you know, I'm going to roll with this a bit. And a few of the people I was with wanted to go to those clubs as well. So that was kind of my inroad to going to BDSM clubs and sex on premises sites, and it was something that I really found fascinating and it really excited me. So, and I think that if you're excited by something, it's not a bad thing. So there's risks, you know. I needed to develop certain techniques, and obviously, you know, have the confidence to practice safe sex and be able to negotiate that. And it was a big learning curve, but I think it's really important for everybody to, you know, explore sexually.
So did your sexuality then push your gender, like of finding your gender? Is that what helped you to do that? Would you say?
That's a good question. I think that my sexual exploration there, what did sort of tie in a bit with my gender identity, because I guess if I was going into gay male clubs and trying to hook up with men as a man, it was a real, if I sort of felt as though, you know, this is a very good affirmation that I'm emitting a male identity and a male energy if gay men are wanting to hook up with me.
Yeah.
So I was sort of structuring it in my mind that way, as well as being really fascinated with playing with men, because it's just like playing with men, I just find is so much more sort of throbbing with, you know, sexual energy, and it just being about that. And I think that's a really interesting space to be in. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the issues of being in a space, whether it's a gay club or a sex on premises venue. The issue of masculinity. Now, at that stage, you're overseas and you're experimenting with, you know, your masculinity. You're having to develop traits and a walk and a talk, I guess. When did hormones and so forth kick in? And when did you take that path so that not only did your mental state align with it, but the physical state, which we see start aligning? Was that at the same time?
Well, yeah, I travelled for about 6 months and then I came home and I started writing emails to all my friends at home to let them know that this is what's happening. A lot of them weren't surprised because I was already very boyish anyway and already known as Jez, so my identity was already a bit androgynous and genderqueer. I needed to let people know, so I guess it was a coming out process. And when I came home, I knew I try to look after myself as best as possible, so I needed a really good foundation to start this process. So I probably waited about another 6 to 9 months before I felt settled back in Australia, knowing that I was in a safe house, safe environment, had lots of support. You know, started the medical transition of going to see a GP who referred me to the gender clinic, where you have to see a psychiatrist and discuss certain things with them. And that whole system is a very complex, process, especially if you are very clear on what you want, but you have to sort of play the game for a while until they give you the approval. And it was about a month after that process I started hormones, and you know, the hormones is a testosterone, and it's an oil-based injection, so it's an intramuscular injection, so basically inject it in thigh, upper thigh, or in their butt.
That's daily?
No, it's not daily. It's there's different dosages, and there's different types of blends. I started doing it fortnightly, but then a new product came out on the market and available, which was a slow releasing hormone, and it was a bigger injection, and that lasts for 2 months. So now I just do it every 2 months.
What was that process like for you, taking hormones and watching your body change?
It was very, very interesting experience. Mainly really, really exciting, because I loved becoming exactly who I wanted to be. I wouldn't do it again for a lot of reasons, obviously. But the main reason is I feel now that it was a really self-absorbed process.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Because you're really focused on yourself, and, you know, it takes up all your headspace. You almost, by virtue of the experience, you become a little bit self-obsessed. And that's understandable, because you're going through something so intense and watching yourself change all the time and really focused on yourself. Me being who I am, in retrospect, I feel a little bit uncomfortable about how how self-absorbed I did get, mm-hmm. because, you know...
I think you're allowed.
I know. I need to let myself go on that. But I think afterwards I made this decision. I was like, okay, it's really time to start, like, giving back to people.
How does body image come up in that? Because you're going from a female to a male body, and then... especially some of us gay boys, you know, have issues about our body. And I know definitely, you know, I do and have done for the last 37 years. So as you're going on to being a man, how does that, you know, your body's changing. It's not, you know, it's from drugs. So then you've got to reach, did you have a type of person that you thought that you wanted to be in that way? Like, did you
Is there a level of masculinity?
Start going to the gym, or did you start eating more, or what happened in your life, and how did your body change?
Well, that was the first change I noticed, that I had a massive appetite increase. But my body, body image is something that has evolved and changed, and it's something that's really, I think, at a critical, it's a critical time in the trans community where I think body image needs to be talked about more, because you can almost strive to be something that you want to be so much that it can be a little bit obsessive again, and you sort of need to celebrate all parts of yourself, and I think you got to really try and be aware of not replicating mainstream body image through trying to be, you know, like a real fit, muscular man, because that is what a real man is in the eyes of the mainstream media and society. So I, you know, it's something that I constantly try to analyze and understand. And I think I have got a good body image and self-esteem around that. And I do go to the gym. And there was a while I was definitely going to the gym a lot to try and get muscular in my upper body, because I knew that that would create a more masculine appearance. But it also was linked to making sure I had the best results for my top surgery as well, defining the pecs, you know. So
we're going to get into surgery right after this, and we'll also start covering some of the transphobia and so forth that's out there. We're just wondering, when you're going through this, are there support groups available? Are there chat rooms and so forth? Are those facilities available while you're going through these processes and questioning yourself and going through the hormones?
Oh, absolutely. There is a lot of support online. The online support is probably the biggest domain, because the trans community is, you know, made up of so many people, and we're so spread out, not only nationally but globally. So that's, you know, there might be a trans guy in a country town with a population of 520. He's not going to find anyone else to talk to. So online is the, so there's definitely private chat rooms, email groups, there's support groups that you can meet up in different cities. I think you just got to do a bit of research to find that, but there's definitely an abundance of support out there.
There's a Facebook group I know I'm a part of. I'm trying to think of the name.
Well, there's a youth group that's started up called Why Gender. I think that's for 15 to 25-year-olds, I think. There's Trans Melbourne Gender Project, which I've been involved with for a few years. And there's an online Yahoo group called Oz Guys, so OZ Guys. FTM Australia, there's definitely links.
FTM. Yeah. This is Word for Word Across Australia on your community radio network. We're talking to Jez today about transgender.
Word for Word, delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word, challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining.
Word for Word, with Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson.
Broadcast live on Joy 94.9, Sundays from 11 a.m. and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
This is Word for Word Across Australia on your community radio network. We're talking about transitioning F2M, and we're hoping we're sort of covering a lot that you want to hear about and understand, and it breaks down some of the social stigma and basically just gets us understanding what's going on. We're talking about the taking of testosterone injections. Now, do you have to take that for the rest of your life? And how often?
Well, I'm currently taking it every 2 months. So depending on what the medication is, That's my dosage. Yeah.
Now I know it's a bit personal, but cost wise, is it covered or is it a very, very expensive process?
It's an extremely expensive process. The average cost of someone transitioning is about $25,000, and I would have probably spent, you know, around $25,000-$30,000. So pretty much, I haven't got a house. If I didn't have to transition, I would have been able to buy a house by now. Yeah, there's some aspects of it that are covered by Medicare, but it really isn't covered. You know, it's so expensive, and there's not much support from the Medicare system.
That means a lot of people out there
can't even afford it.
Can't even consider it as an option.
Yeah, it's deeply upsetting that it's such an expensive process. So there's so many layers involved that can create so much stress, and then having affordability being one of those factors is really problematic.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about even more cost and intervention. Surgical. Some people go down the route of surgical intervention. Mm. Now, can you actually go into what those options are?
Yeah, that's right. There's some people choose to take testosterone and some people choose to have surgery. But the community is very diverse and it's not for everyone, nor that they may not want that. But some of the surgery options and the most common would be to have chest surgery. So that's a reconstruction of the chest to basically create a male-looking chest. So you end up with pecs and smaller nipples, you know, or you end up with a flat chest, essentially.
And that can be designed with the surgeon as well, can't it? Because you can say, well, I'm really kind of this feeling. Or I know Ian Harvey, the comedian, brings into his show the fact that he loves, he wanted small nipples. In fact, he wanted just the nipple. and they made the negotiation to have quite a small area.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the people that perform the surgery are essentially also cosmetic surgeons that specialize in a lot of areas. And the surgery itself, the procedure itself, is actually kind of a development of a breast augmentation surgery for men. So it's a very similar process, and men sometimes develop a bit of breast tissue when they want that removed. And it's sort of an extension of that procedure. So with any surgeon, you can consult with them. They will have a procedure, a standard procedure, or some options depending on your body type and et cetera, and discuss about what result to achieve and hope to achieve. Yeah.
Now, the one that everybody wants to know and either asks inappropriately and unnecessarily, but some people do actually want to know because they're interested just to know more about, is genitalia. Mm. Now, since reading Dude magazine, which we'll talk about, I could talk for hours here, you actually highlighted with photos and so forth, you know, some genitalia, and it really did open my eyes to what's out there and the differences. Mm. But surgical intervention and testosterone, how does that affect genitalia?
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes people do ask flat out, and it can be very personal and inappropriate, because I guess it's the sort of thing where you wouldn't ask anybody else what's in their pants. Mm-hmm. So you do feel very exposed when and uncomfortable when asked. But I understand that it's an area of interest, and there's a lot of information online if people want to look it up. But basically, what I included in Dude magazine, I'm trying to promote that there is diversity in genitalia, and promote also that you don't need to have surgical intervention to feel as though you have male genitalia. And I think it's just a shift in the way of thinking, and basically encouraging diversity in the culture. But from testosterone, you'll have natural growth. And I'm referring on the show, I know I need to use...
You can say penis.
but basically, I like to call it the tranny penis.
Okay.
there's surgeries that you can have, which are extremely expensive. Again, like, we're talking large dollars. And unfortunately, the medical industry are not too focused on trying to create the best result. It's probably not a top priority, unfortunately, and stem cell research and all that sort of stuff, you know, hopefully in years to come there will be better options. But I always say that, you know, and it sounds so cliche, but I guess, you know, the genitals don't make the man, because if that was the case, then a cisgendered man with a small cock would be less than a man than a guy Oh, I'm sorry about
you
that.
You said the C word, didn't you? Didn't I not warn you about that word?
Edit that bit out. Yeah, you know, less of a man than, you know, another man that has got a 10-inch penis. So it's flawed, that.
But with testosterone, growth happens.
Yeah, you get natural growth.
You get natural growth of a penis.
Yeah. Yeah, well, to clarify that, I guess what would originally have been the clitoris grows and becomes, you know, like a penis.
Now, let's go back then to the sex on premises issue then with having sex with men. Some trans guys have issues in going to those clubs, and some navigate it very, very well because the language that they use. And when I was reading Dude magazine, I was really interested when you wrote that you may not have even known that you've had sex with a trans guy and does it really matter? So does it create an issue because of having sex with men?
Well, since writing about this and since coming out and saying, hey, I've been in your sex clubs for years, it has caused some issues in terms of the community response. From a trans male perspective, there's risks involved and it can be dangerous, but I've never felt unsafe. I feel like the culture in those and the kind of unspoken etiquette is very much based on consenting behavior. So if you go to try something and the other person is not into it, they will immediately sort of physically just move your hand out the way, and it's a language of I guess, you know, attempt response and consent through that. So you know, I learned how to do that. So I learned how to basically, you know, negotiate certain sexual acts that may or may not have involved intercourse. And so, you know, there's so many different things that you can enjoy and participate in. So it may never have come up or needed to have come up that I was a trans man.
Which brings the question, do you continually have to come out?
I do. There's times that I do come out, and that's a big burden. It's really draining to do that. It's really difficult, and that's part of the reason why I'm trying to promote and educate in our community here in Melbourne, because if the more people know of it, the easier it is when you come out. It's such a relief when you go, hey, I'm a trans man, and they already know what that is. And it's even better if they've had some experience with it, because you don't feel like you have to sort of re-educate and speak about the same thing all the time, because it can easily turn a real hot encounter into a very boring, you know, lesson.
But I wonder, from seeing you and meeting you now and being educated through the course of this nearly an hour, is why would you have the need to come out until you get to the stage where it's somebody that you wanted to form a relationship with? I know that some people might say you don't want to start a relationship up on a lie, but if it is just a sexual encounter, if it is just an encounter at a pub or a club, why would there be a need for you to come out?
Yeah, when I feel the need to come out is to ensure that if we're going home and we're going to be in each other's space, or I'm going to be in their space, I want to make sure that I'm feeling 100% safe. Mm-hmm. Or if there's a level of perhaps I want something to grow and develop, then it's important they understand who I am as well. But definitely that happens less often than I do. I don't feel like I come out all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's on a case-by-case basis, and it depends on what's involved and what I want or what I think is likely to happen with that person.
All right, let's put the shoe on the other foot then, and you're walking down the street with a girl, or you go to an event, a queer community event. Do you go, why are you here? Because you're a straight couple.
Yeah. I actually went to a trans event. This is ridiculous. I went to a trans event with my girlfriend and got stopped at the door and was asked, do you know what this night is about tonight? And I'm thinking,
yes.
This is ridiculous. Yes, I know what
Although,
it's about.
Although you must have thought, yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah. Well, it's a double-edged sword. It's like, oh, great. I'm, you know, everyone just thinks I'm this straight bloke, but that has its issues as well, because I don't want to be, you know, sort of seen as a straight man. But you know, it depends where you are. There's a lot of privilege in that now, obviously, that I can sort of move about the world and not be hassled if I'm seen as in a straight couple. But I'm uncomfortable about that. I'd really prefer people just to have more of an open mind and consider that, you know, I might be bisexual or queer, or that might be my friend, or we might have multiple partners and interested in lots of things. And
but do you want to be seen just as a man? Or is it always going to be as a trans man?
No, well, I feel like I am a man, but yeah. I think there are complications and inherent sort of issues that need to still be tabled because of their, you know, transsexuality and transgenderism exists, and there's stigma attached to that, and there's health promotion that needs to happen in response to that. So, you know, I could, if I wanted to, move away and relax and live my life quietly as a man, but I like to be in my community and I like to continue these discussions because I think you see culture evolve that way.
Mm. Well, with visibility comes change, and that's why you created Dude.
Yeah.
Before we talk a little bit about Dude, can you just go over some of those chat room sites and those sites that people can get further information? You mentioned...
Well, there's a Yahoo group online called Oz Guys, so it's OZ Guys, and that's through FTM Australia. So that's that. I find that chat room to be really good for people who are questioning things or wanting information. That there's so many guys on there that know a lot. So I think it's always important to do your own research and speak to as many people as possible and go find a good GP that will support you, because I think the most important thing in this process is actually having just emotional support. I mentioned, I think, Why Gender is a youth group. There's Melbourne Gender Queer. There's Trans Melbourne Gender Project. There's also Zoe Bell Gender Centre, which is a health body working on many projects and initiatives around the topic of gender. So you can Google all of these names and find links to their websites.
Now, Dude Magazine, you started one day, you thought, hey, I'm just going to start something. Now, you call it a zine.
Yeah.
That's a groovy term.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I guess it's like the anarchy kind of education of just, you know, DIY sort of booklet, and the zine is like, you know, it's like a cheaper form of publishing something because it's often just pasted together and photocopied. But I managed to get funding. I went out and, you know, basically said to the people that I knew in the community and have built relationships over the years, Crusader Hillis being one, who's the CEO of the Also Foundation. I said, look, this is a project that needs to happen, and they supported it by funding and printing the zine. And since then, I've had a lot of response and more people jump on board wanting to be involved. So it's currently being redesigned now by a fantastic communications designer. And, you know, more funding is coming through. We're still receiving donations. We always need more money because it's free. So I'm not making any profit or, you know, I'm not selling it. It's not even paying for the cost of printing. If it's making it free, it makes it most accessible.
You made 500 copies?
Yeah, we first printed 500 copies and it pretty much ran out, you know, within a week. It soon will be online and you can download it. So it'll be available, you know, worldwide then. And there's a lot of people that are waiting. I've promised that it would come out a couple of months ago. So I'm sorry, everyone.
I know. I was wondering what was happening.
Yeah, I sort of worked very hard every night for 4 months. And then as soon as I launched it, I needed a break. So I sort of slowed down a bit after that.
Tell us what's in it.
The last time I got asked an inappropriate question, it really made me realize this tool needs to be out there. So it gives a really simple overview and understanding and education about what a trans guy is or what trans is. And it's got information about types of surgeries, types of bodies and identities and sexuality. It's got images and it's got also a large amount of content submitted by people in the community, either artists or people that wanted to write and share their experience. So you've got sort of, I guess, the clinical and factual overview educating you, and then you've got a lot of personal content to sort of give you context to relate the information in the world, and it makes it a little bit more personal. But it's a guide on how to play with trans guys and what you need to know or what you may not have known. And it also has an amazing section. Sam Orchard, a comic artist in New Zealand, we collaborated to basically really clearly outline what are appropriate lines of questions and what are inappropriate to sort of, destabilize that stigma and kind of try and protect trans guys from the kinds of questions that you can get asked.
Because questions do need to be asked. It needs to be put on the agenda, but they just need to be put the right way.
They need to be put the right way. And sometimes you have to work out, is this question satisfying my curiosity alone, and is it only benefiting me by asking it? And can I go somewhere else and find out the information without putting the responsibility on the trans person to educate me? And I think that type of mentality and approach to self-education transfers over to so many other topics like racism, sexuality, religion. I think we all need to make an effort to learn as much as possible ourselves.
Yeah. Jez, you're amazing. Just the clarity of what you've gone through today. Yeah. Really, really, I really, really enjoyed the discussion. It certainly opened my eyes. Andrew?
Yeah, and mine, definitely, yeah.
Thank you for joining us
today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Sue Wilkinson. There will be a podcast and a transcript of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. And if you'd like to correspond with the program, please email wordforword@joy.org.au.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley and presented by Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.